Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined today for a second round edition of The Headquarters by Harsh Dave. How you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm okay, I guess. Like, this is such a weird series and weird playoff run, and I don't really know how to feel about it. We're going to talk all about that today, and just sort of the sort of weird haze that's over this Raptors team and its fans right now. That's pretty much going to be the crux of most of today's show. We're going to talk about JV and his injury and how that sort of has affected things and what we saw from him in his playoff run. We're going to talk a bit about DeMar DeRozan and his lack of good play. We're going to talk about just sort of general thoughts about the series against the Heat and how ugly it's been and how terrible it's been to watch and all that terribly fun stuff. So let's just get right to it then. We'll be back in just a second here at the headquarters. Okay, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Harsh Dave. We're just going to get into the nitty-gritty here and talk about this Raptors Heat series. If you aren't aware, if you've been under a rock, the series right now is 2-2. It feels like it could be 3-1 Raptors. It feels like it could be 3-1 Heat. It's just sort of been a ugly slog of a series. So, Harsh, just very simple for you. Like, what have you sort of made of the first four games of the series, and how are you feeling about it?
I don't like it, man. I don't like it at all. You know, like last night I was, I guess it's something I do for my sanity where I, you know, start enjoying the stupidity of the game. Like when the Raptors were down by 9, having scored only, 35 points in the first half, I was finding comedic value in that entire experience.
Yeah.
But then they, you know, outscore the Heat by 18 over the next 18 minutes and they take a 9-point lead with 6 minutes left. And I'm like, all right, well, now I'm emotionally invested again.
Yeah.
And like the way that the whole final 6 minutes plus the overtime went down, just a really, really shitty taste in my mouth. You feel like they should be up 3-1. Like that game was in their hands. They had the chance to really close that down, win that game. There's two schools of thought. You could look at it like, you know, the series has been even. Like the point totals are, I think, 1 point apart over the course of the four games.
Yeah.
So 2-2 feels like it's deserving, especially if three of the games go to overtime. But on the other hand, like, you know, I wrote about this in my horrible, horrible recap. It's not really well written, but that's it. I guess it mirrors the game itself. So in a way, it's fitting. But I wrote how, you know, each you can look at it like, you know, it's an even series. 2-2 is deserving. 2-2 is fair. But then the reality is that it was 2-1. The Raptors had a 9-point lead with 6 minutes left. And each game is its own discrete data point. And the Raptors had a chance to go, like I had a real chance to go up 3-1 and, you know, maybe close it out at home, and they weren't able to do it. And they're just playing this abject, horrible style of basketball on offense. That's just, it's not fun to watch, man. Like I sound spoiled as hell, but no fan can tell me this is fun to watch. Like this entire series is a complete joke, like in basketball circles. Like this hasn't been fun to watch at all, and it's too stressful. And yeah, man, like I this morning I just wake up feeling shitty cheering for this goddamn team, man. I'm rambling. You take over for a sec.
No, like I'm with you. First of all, on the comedy aspect, I totally was with you there. When Ross got stolen at the end of the game for the final dunk by Wade, I lost my mind laughing. I thought it was hysterical. It was so Terrence Ross after having such a good game, leading the team in scoring with 14 points. And having that happen again, like the third or fourth time that's happened in these playoffs where he's gotten his pocket picked, getting the ball near his own basket. I lost my mind. But it's sort of a weird thing, right? Because, you know, all season long, it's been, you know, just get to the playoffs and win a round. Like, that's all we want. And, like, now we are, you know, in the second round. It's 2-2. like, I don't know if most people expected this to happen when the season started, to, you know, have a real shot at making to the conference finals. And yes, they've played this. It's sort of thrown off by the fact that they played this terrible style of basketball. And I guess the question is, should it really matter how the Raptors are doing it if they're winning? It's tough because as a fan, it's like, yeah, every time they win, I'm excited and it's really fun. But at the same time, it's, you know, God, they're playing just such a crappy brand of basketball, and it's so hard to just like feel good about it. And DeMar DeRozan is shooting 4 of 17 and just playing horrible, horrible basketball on both ends of the court. And, you know, you should be feeling good, but you just can't. But like, my question to you is, should it matter how the Raptors are winning? Because, yeah, we're looking at like Golden State just like eviscerating teams, and Portland playing a really fun brand, and San Antonio and OKC having a really fun series, and Cleveland just, you know, passing the hell out of the ball and shooting a ton of threes. None of this is what the Raptors are doing right now. None of this is what the Heat are doing right now. Yeah. Does it matter?
Well, I go back and forth about this, right? Like, yesterday you saw me coming to the Raptors' defense. Like, at the end of the day, if they're winning, that's all that matters. Like, people are talking about the Raptors playing this horrible, horrible brand of basketball. But you know what? Like, going into last night, they were up 2-1. They were a 56-win team. Like, that's not a joke. That's not a mistake. So, clearly the formula that they have, it works, right? But the bottom line is, man, like, you play this heavy usage from your two guards. If your offense is predicated on heavy usage from your two guards and your two main guards aren't firing, then suddenly the foundation that your offense is built upon crumbles. And that's what we're seeing here. Like, this, it's not been good to watch at all. And if you like, look, I'm looking at the playoff advanced stats right now, and the Raptors are, of all the teams that are still alive in the playoffs, like, the Raptors have the lowest net rating. Yeah. They're playing like a slower pace than the slowest paced team in the regular season. And
which was almost them.
Yeah. Which would, and they were second
worst. They were second slowest,
and,
right?
Yeah. They were second, Utah. Exactly. And they've taken it to another level now. And you just think about the shooting percentages of their two all-stars and their inability to create offense any other way. It's just been so disappointing to watch. And it's not like for example, Portland has a -3.9 net rating. The Raptors are -4.2. It's not like they're going through, like, Portland had to face, you know, two games of a healthy Clippers and three games of Golden State. The Raptors are facing the Indiana Pacers and the Miami. So there's even the levels of competition. Like, this is like, let's get it right. Like, this is a diluted Eastern Conference. And while it doesn't matter how the Raptors are winning, as long as they're doing it, like, I'm going to look back at this, you know, fondly, most likely, that, oh, you know, we had a great run. We pushed Miami. Like, even if we don't get out of this series, like, we pushed Miami to six games. We were a game or two away from getting to the conference finals, a plateau we'd never reach. We broke our regular season wins record. All that stuff is nice, but I can't help but, you know, worry whether this is the ceiling. Like, there's some patterns have repeated themselves a few too many times now for me to not worry about it. You know what I mean?
For sure. It's sort of weird because, like, if you look at what the problems were last year, everyone, you know, the defense was the main issue, right? And the defense so far in these playoffs has been pretty spectacular.
It's been
really
great. Yeah, it's been very good.
Yeah. What are they ranked right now in defensive rating in the playoffs?
I can look that up quickly. I have it in front of me.
Yeah. But I'll just talk
to you. Sixth.
Okay.
Yeah, sixth.
Yeah. So, but I feel like their defense has been pretty good, you know, pretty much from the jump in these playoffs. And I guess, like, you know, last year the criticism was they relied too heavily on their unsustainable offense, and Masai Ujiri went out and signed all these guys to make, you know, the team more playoff built and more able to win these gritty games. And that's kind of exactly what they've done. They've solved that problem. So in a way, it's like, hey, they're doing exactly what we wanted them to do. It's just the offense has just been so ugly that it's kind of ruined everything and ruined all the good vibes. But like, all the criticisms of the team that were there last season, that they weren't cut out for the playoffs, those have kind of been, you know, aside from DeMar DeRozan's offensive struggles, like, those have kind of been quelled because they are a much better defensive team. And they do have guys who have been there and who, you know, can step up or whatever you want to call it, and do what, like, say, Corey Joseph has done in the playoffs. Like, they have those guys now, which they just didn't have before.
Right. I think, like, just to quickly go off on that point,
yeah.
it's weird because I don't think the offense needs to be that difficult. Like, they're making it a lot harder on themselves. Like, look, if their offense was shitty because guys were just missing shots, and that's as simple as, you know, like Damari Carroll is just missing every shot, and that's just the only problem they have, like, I could live with that. I can accept them losing and being a bad offense. Like, that's not the problem I have. It's that the method to the madness doesn't make sense to me. You know, like, continually force feed. Like, I don't want to pick on DeMar DeRozan. It's very easy to do so at the moment. But to force feed him over and over again, it makes no sense to me. And I think, like, you look at the role players for the Raptors, they've all come out and performed. Terrence Ross has been pretty good. Damari Carroll's been pretty good. Corey Joseph's been pretty good. Bismack had a good game yesterday. So it's like their role players are ready. Their role players aren't shying from the occasion at all. It's just that their two main guards are unable to create offense, and they, you know, depend on them so heavily. And then you look at silly things like running the clock down to 10 before getting into their sets. Like, why is that necessary at all? Like, if you know that you're struggling to create offense through your two main guys, you have to switch something up. You have to try and get out in transition. You have to try and push the pace. You have to get into your sets a little bit quicker. Like, do something different. Like you don't, like, clearly whatever was working, be it due to injury or not, something is not working anymore. And either you can just keep trying it again, keep trying to ram this horrible offense down our throats, or you can, you know, try something new, try something different. You have the personnel to do so. You just have to actually call somebody else's number.
Yeah, and, like, I just feel like we've seen DeMar really just deviate from what made the Raptors' offense so good in the regular season, which if the drive wasn't there the first time, they would kick it out and just try it again from the other side. And that's just totally gone away. It's like he's got tunnel vision, and maybe it's because they're starting so late in the clock that there's just no time to do anything else. And I just don't understand the starting late in the clock thing. I think going slow and slowing the pace to a crawl against the Pacers made a lot of sense because their offense was so poor. And if they don't have a ton of possessions, they just weren't going to be able to score enough points to win. And they were also really good when they moved in transition. So I understood making it slow against the Pacers, but against the Heat, a team that has a really good offense, has been shooting the lights out in the playoffs for the most part until the last couple games in the series. And with guys who are, you know, in their 30s and probably can't hold up if it's a sprint of a game for the entire 48 minutes, like, push it a little bit, man. Like even Corey Joseph, like, just walking it up the court every time and getting things going with 12, 10, 8 on the clock, it doesn't make any sense because, you know, Miami's just a really good, their defenders are really good positionally. They're not going to give up a ton if they're squared up on you. And, you know, the Raptors are finding that out. And credit to Miami, because the way they defended DeRozan last night I thought was really good. It reminded me a lot of what the Raptors did to Paul George early in the Pacers series, where every time George tried to cut middle, they would just sort of meet him at the free throw line with two or three guys and, you know, force him to put up tough shots from mid-range, or, you know, force him to kick it out to someone else. And the Heat really did that, like, pretty much to a T last night against DeRozan. And DeRozan could never get anything going. He could never find space to get to the rim once he met those guys in the middle. And then he was just getting this tunnel vision and firing up these shots that were just, like, inexplicable, man. Like, first possession of the game, he shoots an air ball from the free throw line. It's like, all right, here we go again. And it's gotten to the point where every time he gets the ball with, like, 14 on the clock, you're like, okay, this possession's over. Like, hopefully this goes in. It's probably not going to, given he's shooting, like, 33%. But, yeah, it's just been the entire strategy hasn't made a ton of sense to me. The Heat are a team I think that you should probably try to run against a little bit more. And
what do you make of this whole thumb thing?
I mean, I think it's probably legitimate.
I think so,
I mean,
too.
You saw his handle. Like, his handle is not this bad. His handle's much improved this season. And you saw last night, especially when he had the brace on, he had a couple times where he got to the rim, or at least once after he took the brace off, and it didn't look as bad. But yeah, like, obviously that's got to be a thing that's affecting his play.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just another built-in excuse, and maybe that's just, like, you come back next season, and if you have everything remain the status quo, you get to the playoffs, and it's like, all right, we don't really know how this team is because we haven't seen a healthy Kyle or DeMar for 2 years, and maybe that's valid, maybe it's not, and maybe neither of their games really translate to the playoffs, although I think Lowry, even though he shot 2 for 11 last night, I think he was awesome overall until he fouled out. And I think if he hadn't fouled out, the Raptors probably win that game just the way he was sort of, you know, affecting everything else on the floor. But yeah, it's.
I think they would have won because it would have kept DeRozan off the floor.
That too, man. Yeah. What did you make of, like, what have you made of the way Casey's handled this series? I think Casey's done, by and large, a pretty good job in these playoffs. I thought in the first round he did a really good job of finding weird looks that worked. But yesterday, man, like, the Bebe experience lasted probably 7 minutes too long. And just starting that fourth quarter with the Lowry, Joseph, Ross, Powell, Bebe lineup, it was like, really, man?
Yeah,
I know this is an interesting look, but like you got a second round rookie, Bebe, who spent his entire year in the D League, Terrence Ross, who has been fine in these playoffs, but like you're playing him at the four, and I didn't understand that choice, and you know, it didn't really cost him the game, but it definitely didn't help matters.
Yeah, I think with Casey, it's like he makes some mistakes. And that costs him, you know, games even at times during these playoffs. But he has these moments of brilliance that, you know, that save his own ass, you know, like mm-hmm. like the Norm Powell unit that he found in what was a game 5 against Indiana.
Yeah.
Or, you know, benching DeMar in game 2 against Indiana. Like he
and almost yesterday.
And almost too. Yesterday too, right? Like he finds these weird units that bail him out of all this, of the few stupid things that he's doing. Like I think he's been fine. Like he's done some stuff I really disagree with, like, you know, the Louis Scola experience, things like that. Ugh. But he has, I don't want to take credit away from him by saying that he has enough talent that he can find a look that works, but it's also, you know, he's done a decent job of not being afraid to go to unconventional looks when he needs to. So I guess there's some credit that goes to that. As far as yesterday goes, yeah, like there were people wrote about, you know, I think Blake and Will both wrote really good things about the mistakes that he made with, you know, Bebe playing too many minutes or Bismack.
Not going to Biyombo
yeah,
at the end.
Exactly. Not going to Biyombo again or playing DeMar again. And all that. Like there was more than enough written about it. And, I agree with most of it, but I also thought he was brilliant in that almost everyone was talking about Toronto needing to go small this series once Jonas Valanciunas went out. And I applaud Dwayne Casey for recognizing that our advantage is to stay big, is that Bismack Biyombo can replicate some of the damage that Jonas Valanciunas was doing, especially with Whiteside out. And I think we got to give him props for recognizing that and sticking with it almost the entire game. Like, think about how much the script was flipped, that we were upset that Biyombo wasn't in and that they were playing small at the end of the game. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's
for sure.
That's what people wanted going into game 4. And we were upset about it. We were upset that he did it by the end of game 4. So I think we have to keep that in mind. I think most people are keeping that in mind. It's more related to the fact that why are you going away from something that was working? But, you know, he found something that worked. That unit, like, stretched out the lead to 18. Like, that's a real halftime adjustment that he made. He introduced Terrence Ross into the rotation, or well, not introduce him into the rotation, but in the second half of that game, he was, you know, coming off curls. You know, he was coming off screens, finding him open at the perimeter. Like, those were legitimately good wrinkles that were introduced into the offense. And to be quite frank, I don't know if they find those if DeRozan is playing at that moment. So,
yeah,
man. Like, I think Casey's been okay. He could still improve. He could still, you know, mitigate some of the mistakes, but. You know, like, for example, Spoelstra took forever to get to that small unit that worked for him. So
yeah.
they've both been pretty even, I would say.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm with you on the going small thing. Like, I was sort of split on it going into the game because of that exact reason. Like, the Raptors have really gained an advantage in this series by just punishing the glass with, you know, Valanciunas out playing Whiteside or Whiteside not being 100%. And then having Biyombo in there, Biyombo hadn't been great up until yesterday, but like even having him in there up against like a Josh McRoberts or Amari Stoudemire or whoever the hell else they're throwing out at center, Udonis Haslam, like that's been a big advantage for the Raptors. And I believe the Patterson-Biyombo pairing was a +26 yesterday. And I think that speaks to the fact that, Miami doesn't have a whole lot in terms of front court depth with Whiteside out. And, that's still an advantage the Raptors can play, as you said. So I think a big part of what happened at the end of the game there was the 3:09 left when Lowry fouled out. I think it was just like, we got to have one of our stars in the game, regardless of how he's playing. And I think that might have been a mistake by Casey.
I think it was 1:58 left.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think so. DeRozan came in with 3:09.
I think he might have brought. I don't know. Like, either way, your point still stands. Continue.
Yeah, like either way, I think it was, DeMar. We had to have one of our stars in there. If Lowry's fouled out, we got to have one of them in there. And I think that might have been, it's an understandable mistake to make, because that's sort of been the method all season. Is the Raptors have been really bad when neither of those guys are on the floor. But I think, they showed in that stretch in the second quarter where Lowry was out, with his fourth foul, that that unit could survive without one of the stars, especially against this Heat team that is just not shooting well. And honestly, outside of Dwayne Wade, have all played pretty poorly in this series.
Yeah, I think in that third quarter they did have DeMar in there for a while. Like, I think he played 8 minutes in the third quarter.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think they went away from him in offense. Like, he was more of like a decoy almost.
Yeah, and then they were totally fine when he did sit the last few minutes of that quarter as well.
For sure, yeah.
That's what it was. It was 3:09 left in the third when he went out for the majority of the rest of the game. That's where I was getting the 3:09 from.
Right.
But yeah, I think it was just a psychological thing, and maybe Casey will learn from that. I don't know. Maybe DeRozan doesn't play this poorly going forward. I don't really know, but I think just based on the Patterson Biyombo success yesterday, I think that gives me some optimism going into the next couple of games in this series. I still think the Raptors are the deeper, probably better team right now, because Joe Johnson isn't really doing anything. Luol Deng has really cooled off. You got Josh McRoberts playing point center, just dribbling around the key for 18 seconds on some of those possessions, and I'm like, yeah, give me that. That is just terrible, terrible offense. So I still think the Raptors have the upper hand in the series, especially with the Whiteside Valanciunas trade-off. Maybe that leads us to talking about Valanciunas, and we can get into some predictions for game 5 and 6 in the next segment. But let's get to JB right now. Obviously, he's out for the rest of the series. What did you make of the way he was playing? Because he was absolutely awesome. Has he done like a – I know you've sort of been a critic of him, just sort of, not sure he's a guy who can play 35 minutes a game and is more of a matchup guy. Did you sort of do a 180 on him during the playoffs here?
To some extent I have. Like, I think when he's facing, plotting bigs, well, Whiteside's not plotting, but he's like, a five, out and out five.
Yeah, he's not stretching the
floor. No, not at all. And he's parked in the post, and he's not really a threat to shoot. And he doesn't really have a face-up game either. He's more of just an energy guy on steroids. I think against those guys, JV can thrive, and I think that's why you saw him playing so many minutes. I've come around on JV in the sense that I think he's pretty clearly a very good player, and he's pretty clearly a very good prospect. In the right situations, he can even be a good defender. Like, he was very, very effective protecting the rim against Miami, and that was really cool to see.
That game two overtime, he challenged everything at the rim. And I don't know if he even got a block there, but his hand was in everything.
Yeah, and I think it was like that even in game one. Like, he was everywhere on defense, and that was pretty cool to see. I still don't know how he fits in, like, with once teams go small or in this, like, quote unquote modern NBA. Like, if a defender as good as Bogut can only play spot minutes because of his defensive liabilities, when teams go small, like, maybe JV suffers in that way too. So long term, I don't know how much more his minutes go up. Like, I think eventually he'll be in the 30s, just because he'll become potent enough offensively that he'll be able to damage smaller opponents. So yeah, like, I'm optimistic on him. Like, I think he's turning into a really, really good player and a really promising player, and at the very least, a very promising trade chip. So yeah, man, all's good. All's good with JV. I'm happy with him, and even if we keep him for the duration of his contract, like, I think we got a steal there.
I'm really bummed that he got hurt because he was having such a good series, and it seemed like he was really enjoying kicking ass. He was I guess like where you come down on JV sort of ties back to what we were talking about earlier, where it was like, you know, because even though the Raptors are playing this like ugly style, it doesn't mean there's only one style of basketball that is going to work in the NBA. And I think this sort of speaks to the, you know, it seems like NBA, like people want the NBA to become monotonous in terms of style. And, you know, guys like JV kind of give the option of having a different look with the team. And I'm okay with that. I think it's good to have teams that are differing in style. I think it's good to have, you know, big men who have quirky skill sets that don't really fit in with the super pace and space style, but you know, they can hurt you in other ways. Like you mentioned, they can hurt you when you go small because he's such a beast inside, and he's got so much size and strength that he's really tough to deal with for small defenders. And you know, maybe you can dictate the action that way. And you know, I think this is why I think we're so compelled by like a Spurs Warriors series, because there are conflicting styles there. I think it's why a lot of people wanted to see Utah play the Warriors in the first round, because the styles are so different. And like, I think that's what makes the NBA interesting. I think if every team is the exact same with, you know, guys who can shoot it at every position and guys who have the same skill set, that just becomes kind of boring to me. And I think JV is the kind of guy who can kind of mix that up and give the Raptors a different look. Maybe it's not, you know, what's, you know, on vogue right now, but I think it can work in the NBA. I don't think there's one way to be successful.
For sure. And I think like my gripe with the Raptors isn't so much the style, it's more that the lack of flexibility. What like I don't mind that they don't pass the ball as much, or that you know, they're not a ball movement based offense. Like I don't really care about that. Like for me, it's just the fact that it's not intelligent to play the way that they're playing. Like for example, the Spurs are a great offense, or they're at least a very, very good offense, despite the fact that they shoot the fewest number of three pointers, or I think it's like bottom two in the league, like during the regular season. Like
A crazy amount of mid-range shots for them.
exactly, but that doesn't mean you're not a good offense because of it. Like if you're finding open jump shots, like that's still an effective offense. It's just that the Raptors play, and you know, the Spurs play two bigs almost all the time. The problem that I have with the Raptors is just that they're not generating smart shots, and that's my biggest gripe with it. Like if their whole drawing fouls offense was working still in the playoffs, then I'd be like, all right, that's cool. Like what you're doing is fine. Like it's still efficient offense. It's just that right now everything is crumbling. Like DeMar is launching almost exclusively from outside the paint and inside the 3-point line, and that's just not a good idea, especially when it's all coming off of pull-ups and after 3 to 6 dribbles at the end of the shot clock. Like what are we watching? Like it's been so bad to watch. Like smart basketball people are just like, I don't want to watch this dude anymore. And that's like, yeah, try being us. You know, like I don't know, man. Like I'm just so disenchanted with just watching him and watching them play basketball right now.
I don't even know. I guess we've sort of touched on it. Like, you thought it would just open up a whole bunch in the last game because of the lack of Whiteside and just how, you know, Udonis Haslem can't jump anymore, neither can Stoudemire, and Josh McRoberts as a center doesn't scare you at all, even though he had that big block on JV in game three. And you just thought it would open up, and it just didn't. But like, let's not like sugarcoat how terribly the Heat are playing in this series as well. Like, they might be playing uglier than the Raptors are. Pretty much by every metric they are. I mean, right now I'm looking at the pass tracking on NBA.com for the playoffs and the second round alone, and the Heat are averaging 260 passes a game. That is 76 less than the Warriors are, more only than the Thunder, and the Thunder have two of the best players in the world, so they can get away with it. They're averaging 13 assists a game. They're averaging 26.5 potential assists a game, which is like almost half of what the Warriors are averaging. They aren't creating any points off assists. The secondary assists, they're averaging 1.8 a game. Like, it's the Heat are playing pretty terribly as well. I mean, the Raptors are just above the Heat in all these categories, pretty much. They're moving the ball a little bit more, actually, but which is surprising to me. They're actually fourth right now in terms of second round teams and passes per game, which is weird, but
I think the main thing to remember, though, is that Like, the Heat have guys who, you know, thrived in isolations almost their entire career, right? Like, Dwayne Wade has been really, really good. Goran Dragic has been pretty decent. Same with...
The last couple games, he's been sort of bad,
I mean,
but...
on the whole, like, in the series, like, especially game one, remember how much of a tear it
Oh, yeah.
was. Or, and, like, Joe Johnson, like, even though he hasn't been great this series, like, that's his route to offense.
Yeah.
For me, it's just that, like, man, like, DeRozan and Lowry have been off the entire playoff run, and we're
Yeah.
still playing the exact same way. And, like, especially when you add injuries into the mix, then there's even less of an excuse to me that they're doing the same things. Do you know what I mean? So it's just
Yeah.
like let's switch it up. Like, let's try something new. Let's speed the court up a little. Like, your defense has been fine. Let's do something different on offense. Let's be better, because we're better. There's a reason why we won 56 games this season. Like, we're better than the Heat. We're deeper than the Heat. The Heat just lost Whiteside. Like, this doesn't need to be this close.
I'm very much okay with just getting Terrence Ross like 15 looks a game, ripping around those screens like he has been in the series. That's been one of my favorite things to watch in this series, is Terrence Ross becoming JJ Redick. JJ Redick with less good hair and tats and less podcasts, but
A less intelligent JJ Redick. I mean that with 100% love for Terrence Ross.
Yeah, Terrence has been fine. Terrible, ridiculous gaffes at his own end in terms of just giving up steals to Dwayne Wade repeatedly. Like, learn from that, Terrence. But
I think he has like four backcourt like interceptions thrown.
Yeah,
or like,
and
it's
then like,
crazy.
he had I think it was the final play of the game yesterday, the regulation yesterday, when they were trying to get Corey Joseph that look that was also terrible. Ross caught the inbound pass, and I was horrified until he got it off to Joseph. I was like, no, this is ending right here on a steal from Terrence Ross. So yeah, it's been such a bad series, man. But at the same time, like, we'll wrap this up here and we'll get to the next segment, but like, we've talked about all the ugliness and how crappy the Raptors' style in these playoffs have made people feel, but like, should fans be happy? Should they be excited? Because everything about the context in which it's happening, in that it's a 56 win season, they have a pair of all-stars and they are in the second round. Like, everything there is like, wow, we definitely would have taken that at the start of the season. And it seems like the shittiness of the series and the fact that the team isn't playing the way they did in the regular season is kind of taking away a lot of the fun. But at the same time, I feel like fans should be pretty happy. I mean, they're going to get crushed by Cleveland in the next round, which we'll get to in the next segment. But like, I feel like it should be mostly positive vibes, even though it's been horribly played.
I mean, I was with that line of thinking until it went 2-2. Like, last night just leaves a terrible taste in my mouth, because it's like, it's bad enough to watch ugly basketball, but then it's, you know, doubly horrible when they don't win. So I mean, in general, like, Raptors fans should be happy, and I think most fans are happy. It's just, I also think, like, we like this team because of, you know, our regional attachment to it, but also, like, basketball is meant to be fun. Basketball is supposed to be a sport that, like, all sports is supposed, there is something that you watch and invest so much time into because you enjoy it, and because it's, you know, aesthetically pleasing, or, you know, at least somewhat. And, you know, just with DeMar's looming free agency, and like, Kyle Lowry losing form and entering free agency in a year or two, and it's just, there's legitimate reason to be a little bit miffed about the way things are going. Like, you're well justified if you're worried about the contract that DeMar is going to get. Like, I think that's a fair line of thinking right now. Like, just no matter which side of the ledger you fall on, like, I think if that's something that's making you worry, like, I can understand that. Like, I would probably say that, you know, just hold tight on that until the off season, but it's this looming, like, cloud over this entire series that this dude who's playing horribly and is making terrible decisions over and over again is, you know, liable to get $30 million next year. So I can sort of understand that. And in general, man, like, look, this is like sports. I've written about this like multiple times. Like, sports run on the commodity of hope, right? So when you look at this team and if you start feeling like this is the ceiling of where this team can get, And don't get me wrong, this is a great ceiling, like 56 wins, Eastern Conference semis, potential finals, Eastern Conference finals, like that's all, it's all gravy. But unless you're right at the top, if you don't see the potential to go higher, like this can grow stale for you. And I can understand that line of thinking as well. Like there was a certain joy that I found in watching, you know, DeLon Wright and Norman Powell lose in a tough game at San Antonio. Do you know what I mean? Like, I might come back and, you know, regret what I'm saying, and I might be, you know, clouded by yesterday's game, but if they lost fewer games, but they, you know, provided more hope for the future, like I saw a few kids coming in and playing and, you know, showing out and showing potential for the future. Like, I think that's still worth watching. If they played a more eye-pleasing style of basketball, that's still worth watching to me. So to me, wins and losses aren't everything. It's also just, you know, just the emotion that goes into it. Like I don't know if I made my point, but that's sort of how I feel.
Totally did.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess for me, like I think there's the team right now, while the Lowry, you know, going into a contract year issue is a thing, and obviously DeMar's contract, like I have been pretty much supportive of DeMar getting the deal from the Raptors for pretty much the entire season, and like I still sort of am on that, like he's testing my resolve, don't get me wrong, but like
I think he's testing everyone's resolve, like
yeah, like I still think it's smartest for the franchise to keep him and just figure it out later. But but the thing is, I think the Raptors do have a good mix of, you know, solid ceiling right now. Maybe it's not the highest, but at the same time, like, well, who are we to beg for? Who are we to like ask for what we get? Like, this has been a franchise that's been destitute for so long. Like, to have a run like this and to have 3 years in a row where they're a playoff team and they're exciting and they're keeping you interested until May, like, that is, there's something to be said for that. And maybe if this was a team that, you know, for 5-6 years, maybe if they were at like the Memphis stage where it just clearly wasn't working, there was obviously some decline going on with the big guys on the team, and the major names, and there were guys going to free agency and all this fun, there's all this stuff that just sort of it signaled the end of an era, I would be more inclined to be, you know, sort of upset about the future. But at the same time, like, I don't think the issues that face the Raptors right now are insurmountable. I think and I don't think they mean like next year is going to be bad. I think next year they're going to be very much similar to what they were this season, especially with some added flexibility that they have with draft picks. And, you know, that's the other thing too that I'm trying to get at, is there is some hope for the future, even if right now you're not totally stoked with the current product. I mean, they have, you know, 4 first round picks in the next 2 seasons. Obviously, they're not super high picks, but those can be translated into other things. One of them is a ninth, it's going to be at least 9 or 10, which is nice. It's not a great draft, but that's really nice to have. And as you go forward, I mean, Norman Powell looks like he's going to be at least a rotation player, maybe more. Who knows? I'm not getting crazy about Norman Powell. I think he'll be a pretty solid, you know, rotation wing. Maybe a starter someday, maybe not, but that's okay. He's a second rounder. If anything, you get is gravy. Maybe DeLon Wright can be a nice backup point guard one day. None of these are super exciting, but I think there is hope. And I think, you know, Valanciunas, the way he played in the playoffs, and, you know, if he gets back for a conference finals, hypothetically, like, I think that gives you a lot of hope for the future with what he can do.
Yeah.
So I think the Raptors are in a good spot, just sort of having hope for the future while also having a good product right now.
Yeah, I think you're right for the most part. Like, I think there's legitimate reason to be optimistic. Like Valanciunas and Joseph have been two of the best players in the Raptors playoff run. And they're locked up for the next 3 years.
And Damari Carroll too, man. Yeah. Like, that guy is incredibly fun when he's
right.
On.
And him too. And he's on contract for 3 more years too. Like, even if, like, Terrence Ross, I don't know how you feel. I don't know how people feel about Terrence Ross, but he's on a...
You know how I feel.
Yeah, you're the driver of the T-Ross bandwagon mobile, whatever you're calling it these days. You know, Terrence Ross is locked up for 3 years too at a reasonable contract. Like those are all reasons to be optimistic. And you're right about the draft picks. I love Lowry, and Lowry's one dude, like, the way that people feel that, you know, DeRozan needs to be locked up long term, or he's an asset that you need to retain. Like, I will die on the Lowry hill any day. Like, even if he has a terrible playoff run, he just provides so much value in multiple ways, even when he's not scoring, that I think he's, like, we still have him for another year, and that's amazing to me. Like, that's one of the best players in franchise history. So like there is reason to be optimistic. It's just that am I okay with the Raptors giving up, 35% of their cap to DeMar DeRozan, a guy who I don't think affects the bottom line of this team, and give him the keys to the franchise? Like, I'm willing to entertain that discussion. I'm probably not in on that line of thinking at the moment.
All right, man. We've gone on a pretty long time here. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back on the other side. We're going to look ahead a little bit to games 5 and 6 against the Heat. Get a little bit of predictions, what we think the team's going to do. Talk about what Lowry and DeRozan might do, ways that maybe they can be opened up for a little bit more easy offense. And we're also going to talk about how much of a disaster a series against the Cavs will be, because we like to be happy on this podcast. We're going to be back in just a second here on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Harsh DeVay. We went pretty long in the last segment, so we'll probably keep this one a little quick before we get to the episode sponsor. But let's just do a little bit of forecasting right now. The Raptors game 5 goes Wednesday. You're probably listening to this on Wednesday, so it goes tonight in Toronto. I guess the easy question we'll start with is, what do you think is going to happen, Harsh? Do you think the Raptors take it and go to a 3-2 series lead? Do you think they blow it? Do you think Lowry and DeRozan figure it out, or do you think they continue to shoot terribly, and do you think DeRozan continues to do everything terribly? What are you thinking is going to happen in Game 5?
I'm optimistic. Like, I think we're at home, right? We're at home. That's the first thing. We found a way to, really clog up the Heat offense. And force them into tough mid-range shots. Like, I think Dwayne Wade was the only one, like, truly, truly thriving. Mm-hmm. And, I'll take my chances with him going off again. Like, I'll bet on him not going crazy again. Sorry, yeah.
Hitting 7 straight threes.
Yeah, like, I'll bet on him not just going absolutely nuts again. And you mentioned this in the last segment. Wow, I'm like stumbling over every single word. But you mentioned that Luol Deng, Joe Johnson haven't looked great. Dragic hasn't really looked great lately, and they have no interior presence. And suddenly they're relying on Josh Richardson or Justice Winslow to give them something off the bench. Which, fair play, they might. But on the Raptor side of things, like DeMar DeRozan, like, I guess he can, I don't know if he can be any worse. Can he be any worse? Like, he keeps, testing that theory, but
I think yesterday was his worst game in the playoffs so far.
Here's the thing, though. Like, even if,
and that's,
I have no reason to think that it'll get better, and I still think we can overcome that. Like, I think Lowry's going to be a little bit better, or at least he's going to give you, solid defense, solid playmaking.
He's not going to foul out again, you would hope.
Yeah, like, exactly.
He doesn't foul out all that often. I think he averages like 2.8 fouls a game. Like,
yeah,
he should be fine.
He knows how to toe the line, like, on the physicality thing.
Yeah.
And just, I think Dwayne Casey's gonna figure out a rotation that works. Like, with he now knows to play Bismack heavy minutes. I would presume that we won't see Bebe play 13 minutes again. Like, maybe he'll dust off Jason Thompson. I don't know how people feel about that, but that's a possibility. Or maybe we get extended run for Patrick Patterson at the 5, which is probably better than seeing Bebe at the 5, but I'm not too sure. And anyway, like, just all that being said, I think the Raptors have a deeper team. They've found ways to hurt the Heat on offense at times as well. And I think we'll be all right. Like, I think Lowry will be better. Like, I still hold out hope that Lowry's going to be fine.
Yeah, I think you made a good point there with Casey and just sort of learning that Biombo needs to play heavy minutes. I think Casey has done a pretty good job in the playoffs of sort of learning from his mistakes in one game and adapting pretty drastically the next. I mean, I think it took him only a couple of games to get rid of Luis Scola. It might have been 3. After his first really bad game, he was gone pretty much out of the rotation for the rest of the series. Yesterday, he didn't play him because he learned in game 3 that Scola can't play in this series. I think he's done a pretty good job of adapting and sort of, you know, in game one against the Pacers, he had the weird lineups with no DeMar or Kyle, and then he adapted and adjusted his rotation, and it was fine the next game or for the rest of the series, really. So I think he probably will learn. I think Biombo plays a lot tomorrow night. I think he has a nice game again, just because he has such a, you know, physical advantage over whoever he's up against. And then in terms of just like DeRozan, I just want to see, like, just pass it, man. Just pass
Yeah,
it off a little
that
bit.
look, I think that's a good point, because this is what I was alluding to when I brought up the thumb injury, right? Look, if the thumb is hurt, which, you know, if the free throw shooting is a sign that he's hurt, then fine, fair play, he's hurt. But then it still doesn't excuse him for the decisions that he's making. Like,
This isn't 2011 DeMar, where he doesn't know how to drive and kick at this point, or
yeah.
like doesn't know how to pass. Like, he's a good pa he's a very
Or
good
that he has
passer. He's a good
incompetent
distributor.
teammates. Like, he has good teammates. Like there's no excuse for him to be jacking up mid-range shots like he's, you know, 2005 Kobe Bryant. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, he's being bad. He's only exacerbating the issues by taking the shots that he's taking.
And I mean, I guess the thing is, you want to see him get to the rim more, and if Miami's going to defend him the way they did in game four, I guess, like, that's going to be harder because they are just collapsing the paint. I think maybe it's sort of weird. It's sort of a double-edged sword because you want Biombo in there for his rebounding and defense, but at the same time, maybe that Patterson lineup is the best way to open up some space in the middle because you don't have Patterson clogging up the lane like Biombo does. Like, Biombo is just kind of there and eats up a lot of space, and he's not a great roller, and he just sort of stands there. And you know, that just clogs everything up and it just makes it so there's a mess of bodies in the middle. If Patterson, maybe if they're going with a five out lineup, maybe Patterson can open things up a little bit for DeRozan and Lowry to get to the rim. My hope is that DeRozan's ability to get to the rim in overtime yesterday with like 20 seconds left is something he can carry over, because that was the first time he really did that the entire game and had success. So maybe he'll learn from that. I don't know. That's picking one tiny play over a big game, but like, that's something to draw on, I suppose, if you're looking for positives from DeRozan.
Yep.
My question to you is, how does Goran Dragic get hit in the face in game five?
Oof. He probably deserves it. For the swing that he took at Corey Joseph, probably deserves
Yeah,
it.
but like, he's been hit in the face pretty much every game. Like, what is the method in which he gets hit in the face in this game?
Bismack Biyombo punches him in the face.
He punches him in the
Yeah,
face.
no, don't do that. Don't do that, Bismack. We need you. We need you to play. I just
Just
picked
get
James Johnson.
just get Bebe to
No,
punch him.
James Johnson.
Oh,
That
nice,
dude can do
yeah.
damage. And by the way, I know you're gonna get pissed. Do you know what suggestion's coming right now?
James Johnson should play a little
I
bit.
think James Johnson can play a little bit.
I'm okay with that
Like,
for a little
look,
bit.
I think we saw that five out lineup the Raptors tried. I think they only tried it in overtime, and it wasn't effective with Patterson at the five. Two things to that, right? I think the Raptors were way too small, first of all. Right, like Terrence Ross was probably playing four, DeMar DeRozan was playing four, maybe DeMar Carroll, I don't know, but I think the Heat had a size advantage across the board. One of the ways to mitigate that, first of all, I think, you know, Lowry being on the court makes a huge difference defensively, that Lowry Joseph guard tandem, and maybe you play James Johnson as a four next to Patterson. Maybe that helps you out. Maybe that mitigates some of the size disadvantage. Like, I don't know. It's worth a shot. Like, I think that this is what I'm saying. Like, Dwayne Casey is as much as we want to criticize him, look at the lineup we're playing in Indiana game one and compare it to how far we've come. Like, compare that to the team that played yesterday. And it's like it's worlds apart. And he's been willing to take risks, make adjustments. He's played Bebe and Norman Powell in the playoffs, like in key games. Like the dude is taking risks, man. And I commend him for that. So, you know, maybe James Johnson plays a little bit.
I kind of agree. Here's the thing with James Johnson is, in this series, his really terrible off-ball defense doesn't really matter because nothing's happening off the ball. He can just sort
There are
of,
no
you know,
cuts.
find his dude. Like, he can be fine there. And I think the reason James Johnson lineups kind of sucked in the past is because he would be out there with, you know, DeRozan and you know, I mean, I guess not so much this year, but the year, like the year before, would be out there with Amir Johnson and Jonas and DeRozan, and there was just no shooting. And I think when Johnson is the guy that you're using as your stretch guy, that is terrible.
Yeah.
So I think, like this year, for example, it was Scola, Johnson, and
Biombo for a
and
stretch.
JV sometimes, right?
And
What's that?
And Biombo for a
yeah.
stretch.
Yeah, so like that's bad. You have to have shooting out there if James Johnson's going to be there, because he can't be your guy stretching it. He can be your de facto center on offense and just sort of be that guy you throw post touches to, because he is a good post scorer and he does have a size advantage over a Luol Deng if that's the matchup he gets. And I think he can probably exploit that. So maybe there is a place for him in this series. And, you know, maybe it's in small minutes. I don't know. But and I think also if he's playing with Lowry, then, you know, there's less of a impetus for him to try to like create things on his own, because I think bad things happen when that happens,
for sure.
So yeah, I think you're right. I think Johnson probably does have a place in game five in this series, as in those smaller looks, because as I suggested Jason Thompson last night, just because he gives you know what you're getting with him more than you know with Bebe. Like Bebe has these offensive flourishes where he looks awesome as a role man and it's really exciting, but his defense is so shaky. He just doesn't know how to you know, seal off the baseline, doesn't know how to really protect the rim at this point. And, you know, Jason Thompson isn't a rim protector per se, but he's very sound positionally. He knows what he's doing. He's just sort of a good baseline you'll get.
So you're trying to say he brings the veteran presence?
Yeah, he brings the veteran presence that Luis Scola could no longer provide.
He's doled Luis all Scola of the presence. Brought,
yeah, Scola just got to the point where he was bringing veteran gift cards because he couldn't.
Oh, boy.
My guess, by the way, for Dragic and how he gets hit in the face in game five is he's going to the bench at a timeout. Equipment manager is throwing him a bottle of water and it hits him in the face.
Nice.
That's my guess.
Real cut.
So last thing before we get to our episode sponsor for the day, how much of a disaster is the series against the Cavs going to be if the Raptors get there? Like, it's going to be blood, isn't it? Like, it's going to be so bad.
Like, mathematically, like, just think about how the Cavs have been shooting the three, and think about how bad the Raptors are at guarding the perimeter. And then
they've been shooting the three well against good defenses.
Exactly. And now add in, like, they eviscerated the Hawks, who are the second best defense in the league.
Yeah.
And then now you add in, like, freaking LeBron James, who is unguardable still, and just Kyrie Irving, and god damn, like, it's gonna get bad, especially if JV's hurt for a while. Like, it's gonna get really bad really quickly. But a part of me also thinks the Raptors are, you know, if the Raptors play up and down to the level of competition, they've been doing that for years, and if it all basically comes down to Lowry to me. Like, if Lowry is playing like a top 10, top 7 level player that he was in the NBA, which is so easy to forget at this point, understandably so, but if he's playing at that level again, like, the Raptors have a chance to, you know, push it to 5-6. We're talking about pushing it to 5 games, but but, like, I think it all comes down to that. If not, then, you know, it's another sweep. Cleveland goes to the finals 12-0. So
yeah. And I mean, at least the Raptors would have, you know, Damari Carroll to handle LeBron at least a little bit. And, like, that's something that the Hawks just don't have, is someone to stop LeBron. So that just exacerbates their problems, because LeBron getting inside is what kind of opens everything up for them. I mean, the Raptors aren't going to win that series. I think, you know, the dreams that the people had midseason of the Raptors, you know, pouncing on this vulnerable Cleveland team have really, really evaporated here. But I think that's okay, man. Like, just get to the conference finals, play the Cavs, and, you know, that's cool. Just getting to the conference finals, you have to think, is some sort of...
it's a huge W, man, as a franchise.
Yeah.
Like, for a franchise that's been mired in...
aesthetically around the league, that looks good.
Yeah, like, for a franchise that's been mired in futility for 20-plus years, like, being one of the final teams in the NBA is nothing to sneeze at. Like, you can only play who's in front of you, so... You know, let's Raptors got to take care of business, man. Like, take care of the Heat. Like, they're better than the Heat. They should beat the Heat. And, you know, whatever happens against Cleveland, like, I can take it. I'll be all right with it.
Yeah. Shout out to Kyle Lowry, 10th in MVP voting, which is pretty cool.
That is cool. That is really cool.
I didn't recognize any of the people that voted for him except for Andy Vasquez of the Bergen Record. But shout out to the people who voted for him for fourth and fifth MVP spots.
Very
It's
cool.
pretty damn cool.
Very deserving too, man. Like,
yeah, man.
That dude was unreal this year. It's easy to forget right now, but he really, 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 really was.
That's the kind of bummer, right? It's like people who haven't watched the Raptors all season are seeing Lowry play like this right now, and it's like, what? Lowry's not very good.
Yeah.
I'm Chris Ryan and Julia Lippmann. Lowry sucks.
I saw our guy Addie Joseph
Yeah.
from Sporting News. He was talking about, guys, I swear to you that Kyle Lowry was the best point guard in the East this year.
Yeah, I saw that too,
Yeah.
yeah.
And I was like, oh man, like, he really was, man. He was really, really good. But
He was probably the second best player in the East this year.
Yeah, no, he probably was.
Was he the second? Was there only two guys in the East that were on the top 10 of MVP voting?
Is that true?
I think
Oh,
so.
that's crazy.
Because the other eight were Steph, Kawhi, Westbrook, Durant, Lillard, Green, and Chris Paul.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And someone else, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Like, Lowry was that good, man. Lowry was on that tier. Think about how nuts that is, like, considering what we're watching.
It was awesome. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back on the other side with our episode sponsor for this week, a former Raptor who is currently playing in the NBA playoffs. We'll be back in just a second. Okay, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Harsh DeVay, wrapping things up with your episode sponsor. This week's episode of the headquarters is brought to you by former Raptors big man, former Chris Bosh replacement, Ed Davis, who is currently with the Portland Trailblazers playing in the playoffs against the Golden State Warriors, was witness to Steph's 17-point overtime last night, which was insane.
Did you watch it? I slept through it.
I didn't watch it. I rewatched it this morning, but I didn't watch it live, which I was disappointed to, which I was disappointed about. So, Steph's insane, man. Yeah.
he's playing a different sport.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Yeah. I think he's the MVP, but we'll see. All right, so Ed Davis, man, he was drafted. What was he? 9th overall by the Raptors. 13th overall by the Raptors in 2010. He was part, obviously, of the Rudy Gay trade that sent him and Jose Calderon, along with some stuff, to Memphis for Rudy Gay. And then Rudy Gay, obviously, was turned into a bunch of bench pieces that made the Raptors into a playoff team in 2013-14, which we'll give all the credit to Ed Davis for that, for the purposes of this segment alone, at least. So in 2.5 seasons with the Raptors, he played 176 games. He averaged 7.7 points, 6.8 rebounds, just under one assist, a block a game, shot 54.7%, which is pretty solid. Now he's with Portland. Glad to see he's with Portland after being with that terrible Lakers team last season. That was not fair to him. Now he's just like a solid, you know, he's like Tristan Thompson light almost.
Yeah, he got some six-man buzz this year, man. He was really good this year.
He was.
And he's been a net positive everywhere he went, actually, like Memphis, Los Angeles, Portland, even with the Raptors. Like, he had that string of double doubles like towards the end of his Raptors tenure, and it looked like he was really starting to find his feet. And he finally got a long term deal after bouncing around on like 1 year contracts. So good for him, man. That dude deserves it. He's pretty good.
Was he part of the Young Guns?
Yes, man. He was an OG Young Guns member. Him, Sonny Weems, Amir Johnson, and DeMar DeRozan. Yeah.
Oh no.
And then, okay, the Young Guns, I think, if I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Jarrett Jack's old ass was in that for some reason. Like, Jarrett Jack was like the weird older brother that hangs out with all of his like younger brothers, like friends and shit. Like, it's just like, dude, what are you doing here? Like, go away. Let the young kids have their fun. But yeah, no, I think Jarrett Jack was part of it. It was kind of weird.
That's great. I'm trying to find a story here. I can't find anything with Jarrett Jack, but that'd be hilarious if he was the elder statesman of the Young Guns.
Jarrett Jack,
he's the old revolver of the Young
exactly,
Guns.
Exactly.
anything else on Ed Davis? I don't really have any like standout memories from him. He didn't really do.
I remember him being sad when he got traded, just because he was like finally starting starting to find his footing. And then it, you know, he got traded like right at the wrong time, I guess. Like within like him and the other young guys on the Raptors really had this chemistry going.
Yeah.
And apparently, like from what I remember, like Ed Davis really gave interesting interviews. Like he gave funny ass interviews, and he didn't seem like that type of guy for the first couple of years. But then once he, you know, started getting comfortable in his role, he was, you know, I remember Eric Kareem starting to call him Boss Davis.
Yeah.
Because he said that was his nickname and that catching on. So, yeah, man, Ed Davis was a good dude. Like, I miss him. I miss him. Like, it was fun to root for him.
Also, shout out to someone under 40 being named Ed.
Yeah, no, real talk, man.
Like, my dad's name is Ed. His birthday's today. He's 49. Shout out,
Oh,
Ed.
happy
Happy
birthday,
birthday,
Ed
bud.
Woodley.
Yeah, but, like, Ed's not a young person's name
No, it's
anymore.
not. It's not.
Yeah, so, shout out to that. It's like Gary. Like, how many
Yeah,
Garys can get around?
don't call your son Gary. That's coming from a dude named Harsh, so I'm allowed to throw stones, all right? I'm allowed to do this.
All right, man. Do you have a score prediction for game five?
Oh, shit. Let's go 95-87 Raptors.
Yeah, there's no way 100 points are
No,
being
are you
scored by
kidding
either
me,
team.
man?
Steph outscored both teams yesterday in his overtime,
Yeah, like it's.
compared to what the Raptors that he put up. Like, this series, man.
Yeah,
For so
it's
many
crazy.
reasons, I want this series. Oh, we didn't talk about Anthem Gate.
Oh, well, that's probably for the best because Anthem Gate is stupid.
It is. I would rather read the Wells report than talk about the Anthem bullshit.
Anthem Gate is so dumb. Like, Dwayne Wade was dumb about it, but it's also like, who cares about the anthem? Like, look.
Yeah, there's such an antiquated,
Yeah.
like, tradition.
Yeah.
Ugh, get rid of it.
It doesn't need to happen. Like I always find it weird at the beginning of a sports game that we're standing up for the anthem. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't understand why sports need to be a patriotic
Yeah,
thing, but
especially
I
because
understand
all
in
the
certain
teams are
scenarios.
American, like in most
I understand.
sports.
I understand in certain scenarios where that where it works, like obviously like after 9/11 and things like that, and the Boston Marathon, that stuff actually has meaning. But like for a random game on a Wednesday in January, like I don't see the point of having to do the anthem.
Especially when, like, for example, like when Golden State and Portland are playing each other, like, do you really need to do this? Like, you guys are like an hour long flight in the same country away from each other. Like, can you just relax? Anyway.
Wait, what does the distance between the cities have to do with anything?
I don't know, man. Let me live, all right?
Also, Norm Kelly was tweeting about, oh, can we just end the Norm Kelly thing, please?
Oh, kid.
Like,
So people enable him, man. It's the
if you
worst.
listen to this podcast, report Norm Kelly
A
for
spam.
abusive
Or just tell him to delete his account every opportunity you get. Don't
Yeah,
be as
he's
rude as
pretty
I am about it, but you know, I don't live in Toronto, so I don't care.
But so he was like saying, I think his really bad, awful tweet was like, we should just not play music and just play the Canadian
Yeah.
anthem for the
Oh my
entire game
God,
next
that's
time.
so freaking cringeworthy, man. Like,
Oddly enough, that would probably be a step up for game
oh
ops.
God.
Like, I've been at the home games and
Hey.
I'm like embarrassed by the game ops going on right now, man. Like, the cowbell thing with Christopher Walken is like the go-to third quarter rile up, like commercial
Oh
break, you
man.
know, thing. They still have like the heavy set dude who dances in the aisle and hits the cowbell. Like, this is not funny or cool.
Yeah.
God bless Strizzy for being a big fan, but like, cool it, man. Like,
Strizzy is true.
the okay, there's two things that really get me. Before the game, Strizzy and Kat Stefanikiewicz, I probably screwed that up, but they are out in the square and they get this like half-assed cheer going where it's like one half goes, "Let's go Raptors," and the other half goes, "We the North,"
Yep, I know
and they chant into the mic, and they are the only ones you can hear.
that.
And it's like, oh my God. And then when the games are on, like Herbie Kuhn is one of the voices of my childhood. Like, he's been the voice of the Raptors at the games forever. I remember him calling Vince Carter dunks and everything while I was there, and it was amazing. But man, like, there are times in the games where he is like initiating these "Let's go Raptors" chants, and it's like the crazy 20,000 people are doing it already. We don't need you to do this, Herbie. This is a terrible look.
Especially in the playoffs, like Raptors fans are pretty like organically loud in the playoffs. Like just let it happen. Like just cool it, all three of you. Just Just don't say a word. Like, tell the DJ to turn the volume down and let us enjoy the damn game, man.
Yeah, I totally agree there. Love you, Game Ops. But
See you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm sure they all listen. All right, Harsh. Anything coming down from you on the site at all?
Nothing at the moment. If you want to read a horrible recap, just read what I wrote yesterday, or don't. It's really bad. But read the comments because people were being funny. So yeah, check it out.
Funny or like?
No, it wasn't too bad. Like, there was some interesting discussion there. Echoing the thoughts of Raptor Nation, the anxiety of Raptor Nation. It's a good read.
Right. All right, yeah, so check that out. You can follow Harsh at I Am Harsh Devay. I'm at Woodley Sean. I will be at Game 5. Daniel Reynolds is not going to be there. He's got something going on with
solo.
Work. So, yeah, it'll be me. I'll have probably the quick recap and a longer piece for Thursday. So keep an eye out for all of that. Yeah, it's a busy time, but it's a fun time. And hopefully we get more. Hopefully tomorrow isn't the last home game I get to cover this year, because that would suck.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully not, man.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm hopeful, though. I have belief that the Raptors. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if the Raptors won this in six. I think they are pretty clearly the better team that is just playing poorly. So I guess we'll see if that changes. Yeah, you can always follow the show. You can subscribe, rate, review at the headquarters on iTunes. You can follow Raptors HQ at Raptors HQ. Just follow all the people for Raptors HQ, man. We're all doing stuff. Russell Peddle was on CTV News today.
Yeah, man. All you guys.
Yeah, everyone's doing stuff. So follow everyone that is associated with Raptors HQ. Thank you so much for listening. Harsh, thanks for coming on, man. Hopefully next week we aren't doing a post-mortem podcast on the season. And
fingers crossed, man. Fingers crossed.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, man. Yeah.